Hello and welcome. I am your host, Neil Ward, and I am grateful that you are taking time out of your day to learn more about design educators' paths to tenure. I truly appreciate it. On this episode of Tell It to Neil, we are chatting with John O'Neill, Assistant Professor of Graphic Design at the University of Minnesota Duluth. Let's listen in. Hi, John. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Thank you for being on Tell It to Neil.
Well, thank you for having me.
Of course. So let's get into it. How did you get into graphic design? Where did that start?
My first meeting in high school, I had to do a career project. The assignment was to pick a career and do some research on it. And I just happened to choose graphic art. I didn't even know what it was called, graphic design. I just thought it was called graphic art. My dad had a contact who was a graphic designer, and he was a freelance graphic designer, and we went over to his house, and I was able to interview him, and he showed me that what he did, and this is at a time where, Macs, Apples were coming into the profession, so at that time he just got a Mac, and he was learning how to use it, and since that moment in time when I met this person, I knew exactly what I was going to be doing for the rest of my career.
Interesting. So what was it that really drew you in?
I think it was the whole process that he was talking about. At that time, he did a lot of hand-drawn things, and what have you. But, working with people, making things for clients, having to work out in society, and just the fact that when you do a design, print design, that there's multiple copies of it. I think that's always one of the appeals that I have about graphic design, that the thing that you work on can be mass produced. And even nowadays with websites, the same website will be seen by multiple people. So that's one of the awesome aspects of graphic design for me.
Since you're interested in mass-produced objects, have you ever thought that, or have you ever dabbled with industrial design at all?
No, I have not, but I'm greatly influenced by other forms of design and art. So, I attribute as a graphic designer and a design educator that designers need to look at other disciplines to be, to gain insight to how other people work, how to make things.
So kind of more on the empathy side of things then, learning people's behaviors and what they're expecting and kind of what they need?
For example, with architecture, if you want to look at architecture, what are the things that they do, in the process of making a building or place? I think this is supposed to be known now for graphic designers.
Interesting.
And that goes for science as well. I think that any topic, for the matter, that you can gain something, whether it's about the process, that it can influence your design process, or maybe influence know, how design comes into contact with people. There's no limit to what, but looking at this different things, like, there's no limit on the inspiration or the influence that you would get from that. I've been reading a lot of about disability studies and what scholars have said and written about in terms of disability. And, most of the content that I read about that has nothing to do with design, but because I have a design background and I know what design can do for people, I definitely can connect the dots to what they say and how that one is to design.
One of the people that I've been following is Liz Jackson. Are you familiar with her at all?
I do not.
She is an advocate for including those with a disability into the design process, ensuring that the products and services and designs that are made are actually addressing a problem that the disability community actually needs help with solving, instead of what she calls disability dongles, which, as she defines those, as products for the disabled community by non-disabled designers that solve a perceived problem rather than an actual problem. So coming from an academic lens, by working with the community instead of for the community, you begin to avoid the academic savior complex and begin to dismantle a more ableist view of the world. If you're interested, you can go to her website, www.thegirlwiththepurplecane.com, and look at some of her videos and take a look at the disabled list.
Yes. Okay. I know what you're talking about now. Okay. Another person that I know that's deeply involved in that topic is a person by the name of Kat Holmes, H-O-L-M-E-S Holmes. Kat is spelled K-A-T, Kat Holmes. And she has multiple jobs in the last couple of years, but the one that she is most known for is the one when she was working at Microsoft, and she developed she was the team lead of the inclusive design team, Microsoft. And the team made what is called the inclusive design toolkit. They can download it from the Microsoft Design website, and gives you a whole bunch of information, questions, processes that anyone can use to design what they want to design.
What a valuable resource that Inclusive Design Toolkit is, especially with it being widely available.
Yes, I'm assuming that maybe you know about it.
I do. I've also read her book, Mismatch, How Inclusion Shapes Design.
Yes.
Brilliant, brilliant book. You mentioned that you came into graphic design in high school.
Wow.
And then after high school, did you wind up going to a four-year, or did you wind up going to a graphic design program after high school? Did you work in the field? What happened after graduation?
Yeah, so, and if I may back up in a bit, when I had that career project and I knew exactly what I wanted to do, from that time forward, my main mission in life at the time was to become a golf designer. So when I got to time to apply for college, I was only looking for graphic design programs. And in the state of Virginia, where I grew up, had one of the best schools for that. Virginia Commonwealth University School of Arts. They have a big, art school there, and a very well-known graphic design program there. And so that's where I got my degree, my BFA degree. And I should say, at that time, the department was not called graphic design. It was called Communication Arts and Design. It had graphic design, installation, kinetic imagery, and photography. So all that was in one department.
That's nice. So did you wind up crossing over with students from other areas there?
Yeah. So we had to take photo classes. We had to take installation classes. I mean, now, at this time, all these different disciplines are now its own department. So I think I got there at the right time before they did that. Because all of those classes, I thought of graphic design, green impacts me still to this day. So in addition to graphic design, I also do photography as well.
Nice. And do you have a website for people to look at your photography and graphic design?
Not yet.
Okay.
That isn't the worst. But then they can definitely go to my Instagram account.
Okay. And what would what would the name be?
That would be Design209.
Design209. That's fun. And it rhymes. Should be easy to remember.
The way that came about was the last year of my time at VCU, I began to do some freelance work. My campus, my apartment off campus was 209.
Oh.
So, and I want to correct it's Jose Design 209. So the first letter of my name, Jay Design 209.
Great. I will certainly look for Jay Design 209 on Instagram. Thank you. So then after you graduated from VCU, did you work in the field for a little bit, or did you wind up going for an MFA?
Well, no. I knew before I graduated from VCU that I wanted to get an MFA.
Okay.
But my parents, my dad particularly, said, you need to make money.
Yes.
You need to make money. And he also said that, you have to go and get some experience before you go to get your master's, to make it more, I won't say meaningful, but to make it so that you can better make the coordination between what you learn in grad school to how it would be applied, in the profession. And so I did that for 3 years, and then I applied to multiple schools, and I went to RIT in upstate New York.
Oh my gosh, I love Rochester.
It prepared me for living in Mississippi.
Continue with that thought.
Yes, I have to. So for that time, the only place really that I live in was in Virginia. And so now, and Virginia is in the south. I mean, it's technically it's right in the middle of the country. So now Virginia, now during the winter time, it gets so cold, but it gets cold, in the summertime, it gets very, very, very hot.
Yep.
when I went up to Upstate New York, it was a whole new experience of weather I never really experienced before. I mean, obviously I had experienced cold weather before I got there, but it just took that to a whole new level. Years after that experience, I found my way to the Nuff. So in the Nuff, we have had temperatures that go minus 10, minus 15 at times. And you normally don't see green grass from the beginning of December at the end of November to, maybe to May. Everything at the time is white. But you make up for that in the summertime, because in the summertime, the roof is amazing. It's not too cold, it's not too hot, it's a perfect temperature. So every cold temperature that is spent in the one time, hopefully it's make up for that in the summertime.
Yes, and I kind of think that that's what all of us northern people tell ourselves, that the summer makes up for it.
Right.
Just so we can continue living in the northern states. So when you were at Rochester Institute of Technology for your MFA, what was your MFA in? Was it in graphic design or was it in another area?
It was at that specific time, RIT had two graphic design degrees, MFA degrees. What was called computer graphic design, and the other one was just called graphic design. So the computer graphic design program was a multiple media program. We learned about motion graphics, web design, and what have you. And you have to remember that this was in the early 2000s. So 2001, 2002, 2003, and 4. That's the time period that I'm talking about. So I was in the other graphic design program. We learned everything. We learned about print design. We learned about information design, systems design, all that kind of stuff. And I just took courses in that program. And in addition to that, I took motion graphic courses as well. I don't know if that answers your question.
Oh, absolutely. Then what was your final project then? Or did you have a thesis paper that you had to write, or did you have a project in lieu of thesis?
Yeah, I had a project that I had to do. It was it has been a long time since I talk about this, so
remember as best as you can.
It was how teachers in K-12 can use information components like diagrams, charts, timelines to teach a variety of different topics to kids. So, I mean, at that time, I had an interest, in education and design education to be more specific. And when I did that project, it wasn't fun put that way. Not fun because I didn't want to learn about the topic, but distress the SRT, to do a project like that and to go through on time but looking back on it, it was one of the best, moments I had, in my MFA education, and I have the most regard for that, for that program, for that school, and the people that, I had for professors, are very dear to me, so to this day, and yeah.
Well, and that's what we hope that an MFA experience is, right? Something that sticks with you for the rest of your life, yes. Hopefully.
Yeah.
So do you think that having an education in information and systems design, very handy, especially as we've advanced in the 2000s, do you feel like that has really helped inform your work now?
Yes. Because my focus right now is always going forward would be inclusive design, that different ties into systems thinking and the processes that goes into that aspect of design. Information design definitely ties into accessibility, inclusive design, because information is trying to make information accessible. So that definitely comes into the work that I'm doing now. But where do you go for your master's degree?
So I went to the University of Tennessee at Knoxville.
Okay.
And what's really interesting about this is that you went to Rochester Institute of Technology, and I grew up in upstate New York, so RIT was one of the colleges or universities that I looked into for an undergrad program. I didn't go. But it's funny, we probably saw each other at one point in the past and didn't even know it.
Yes. It's funny how this, just like that happened from them.
Right.
But it was meant to be that we would meet one another.
Absolutely. But I too had the same immersive, impactful experience at UTK as well. So it's nice to hear that we have similar experiences.
Yeah.
At what point did you have the aha moment that you thought, you know what, being a design educator might be for me?
I'm not necessarily said that there was one moment in time where that would go, I would do this. But because at that time, Faith Fairbanks was teaching FSU at that time. Ben Day was teaching at FSU at that time. And Rob Kyle was teaching there at that time. The whole way of, the whole set of people that's hiring them for their own teaching was there when I was a student. I was in all of them. Every time I saw Ben Manch, I got really nervous. I couldn't speak. I was so in awe of him and the Ben Day, Professional Day, who I had for a variety of different classes. His teaching, has impacted me so to this day. They were my design heroes. They were the people that I look up to. I couldn't look at a design book and see, famous graphic designer and see the work that they do. But for me, it was my teachers that were my design heroes. And I want to be just like them. And that was really what brought me into design education. And I also like the academic scene. I just like to be on campus, mingle and interact with different people. I've always liked that.
It is a really nice environment, especially for design.
Yes, I often tell people when they ask me, what do I do for a living? I say, well, I get to learn things for a living. I get to learn things and apply the things that I have known before and continue to develop my own understanding of different things and to relate that back to my students.
Yes, that to me is one of the hallmarks of a true educator. Never stop learning, never stop synthesizing information, never stop bringing it and delivering it to your students.
Yeah, and I would say this too, that the BFA and the MFA that I got from those two grad schools was amazing. However though, all of the demos that I ever had in my courses at that time has just applied to anything that we're doing now. Because Photoshop and all of this different software was so different back then. Design education and design in general has changed so much over the years that was being taught back then, has changed its course. So, as a designer, you do have to keep learning. You have to keep learning different softwares, and you have to learn different ways of designing. But what is most important, above all, is the autonomous skills. The way to think about and design problem, the system thinking behind this, the topographic principles. Those are the things that should be in the forefront of the work that you do.
I couldn't agree more. After graduating, I guess I want to ask, so how did you get to where you are now at the University of Minnesota Duluth?
Well, that is an odd story. more time than what we have, but so I graduated in 2004, and it took me a while to find a job. I did not go to working into design education at that time. The job that I got, this happened to take me back to Richmond, Virginia, where this year I worked for an local design firm, and that did not work out so well. And so when I left that job, I decided to open my own business design business. And I had no clients. The only thing that I had was a small Apple Mac computer. I know Plenum, anything like that. All I had was software and my computer.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So,
humble beginnings.
humble beginnings. So, my professors that I had when I was in school was still teaching there, and I asked them, hey, I want to ask you about teaching. What can I do to get my foot in the door? And at that time, a professor by the name of Matt Woman, he is an author of different design books. So he was the department head, and he was one of my teachers in undergrad. And he goes, yeah, that'd be great, we would love to have you, and we think that's good that you're coming here, and We got an undergrad degree here, but we got a master's degree somewhere else, and that can give us a different point of view. And so I taught one class, and then one class became two, and so on and so forth. And then I got the opportunity to teach at different schools after that. Whenever I, well, actually, while I was teaching at Fishview, I also began to teach at Virginia State University. So one day I taught at Fishview, and the next day I taught at VSU, Virginia State University. And that was a great experience. And then I got a full-time teaching job at a school called Sylvan University in North Carolina. And then that was a temporary full-time appointment. And so when that got done, I moved on to find a different teaching job, and I just happened to make my way to the North.
Interesting. So that was a nice little arc.
Yes. So when I took the job when I interviewed for the job, when I came for the interview, that was the first time I ever been to Mississauga.
And what did you think?
Well, I remember, the news is what next to make appeal. So I was pretty excited to see that with my own eyes. So when the airplane was coming down to the airport in the news, we flew over the lake, and the lake was frozen. I thought to myself, wow, that's ice down there. And and then I saw tons of snow when I came here. And that was in April. I came in April. April was like April 24th or something like that. It was almost May when I came, and there was ice on the lake. So, I took the leap of faith, and now I'm up here. And, not only has it been great for my career, but it was if I had never came here, I never had met my wife.
Aw, so it's a love story, too.
And she is also a grad, a BFA grad of the department where I teach.
Is that where you all met?
No, we did not meet. We met online, like most people do these days. But this happens to be that she graduated with BFA, and she got her degree from UND, and so she got her BFA before the department was called Art and Design. At that time, it was just called the Department of Art.
I assume that you are working towards tenure and promotion.
Yes, I am. Every day.
I know.
Every day, every minute, every second.
It's a marathon.
Yes, it is.
What has been your area of research and scholarship as you're working towards tenure?
Yes. The broad theme of it is disability rights. In addition to my design work that I do and teaching that I do, I'm an advocate for the people with disabilities, not just because I want to, because I am a person with a disability. And so everything that I do in that regard, I can relate a great deal to. But to narrow down to the specific aspects of disability is what is called inclusive design. I I look at how to decide for the greater society, but also keep in mind of that people have different abilities, and these different abilities come in multiple forms. And to execute the science that considers that and that would be feasible and how it's used so that someone with a different ability, you know, can use it the same way as everybody else can use it.
Inclusive design has definitely become a bit of a buzzword over the past decade, I want to say.
Yes. There's actually like three terms. There's three terms that, you know, relate to one another, but they're kind of different. That is accessibility, inclusive design, and universal design. And a lot of times people ask me, what are the differences between the three? The best way I can describe it is inclusive design is the process that you will go through. Accessibility is the outcome that you hope for, that you want to achieve. And so, and the inclusive design principles are the things that you use in the inclusive design process. And if I can elaborate on that even more.
Please.
I have come up with a term that keeps it all together. I call it ability design. That you are, the main thing that you try to do is you're designing for multiple abilities. So the three different things that I just mentioned, for me, tie together what I call ability design.
So are you presenting on this anywhere or writing about it anywhere?
Yes, I am in the process of writing people about that. And the presentation that I was going to give at the UCDA, I also spoke about that. And I'm making my way around to different venues and different people talking about that. Because I think that there is some confusion of what is of those things is of and how they relate to one another. And I think that's like the best way to describe it. And I also say that the idea that inclusive design is the process and the accessibility is the outcome, I did not come up with that. There's multiple people have come up with that. But what I have done is I just put into a packet, which is called ability design, of ways to talk about that and to know the difference between those different terms.
I would love to be in one of your classes when you're talking about this.
Well, I mean, my classes in the fall is going to be online, so maybe just hop on.
So there's a possibility.
One of my presentations, so we'll have to talk about that.
It looks like we're nearing the end of our interview. When are you heading up for tenure and promotion?
So, had not the COVID-19 came about, I would have gone up next fall. There would be, this is 2020, so it would be the fall of 21. the fall of 2021 have though, because they are coronavirus, all of the people that was on that is on the 10th track and the university got more and more, you know, the option to go one more year. So I decided to take that. So it'd be 2 years from now.
Okay. Yes. So to everyone who's listening, this podcast is being recorded in late June of 2020 after the spring semester of 2020, where half of the semester was online at most universities in the United States.
Yes. Yeah, and I'm afraid they want that they're giving professors on the tenth track the option to do that, because this, by, you know, the fact that the time that's going to take now to do the course prep to teach online. I had different conferences that I was going to go to that was canceled. A lot of those things, if they could have happened, would definitely help my case for tenure, but since they didn't happen, to no fault of me, that, I'm just thankful that the increasing of Minnesota system is doing that for us.
Absolutely. And yeah. Kind of a nice thing now is that hopefully most of the conferences will still happen, but you won't have to travel for them. All you'll have to do is record your presentation and just upload it.
Yes. So I'm definitely looking for conferences that will do that now, and it's kind of sad too, because one of the best things that I like about conferences is going to different places, and meeting different people and fits. So I know that's how you and I got to meet. So
yes.
And I was going to go to your university this past spring, and that got canceled. So that is disappointing.
You're telling me.
Yeah. And I know it's even more disappointing, given that you were so involved in that and you were trying to get everything ready for people to come.
Yes. Well, and this year's CCAC conference was going to be at VCU, which would have been a nice place to get together again, and for you to visit your alma mater too.
Yes. I was going to take a part of that, but it might not happen now. So we'll see what happens.
Yes, we will. Do you have any parting thoughts or any upcoming projects that you'd like to talk about in the last couple of minutes?
Yes, I'd like to talk about a very exciting project that I'm taking on right now.
Okay.
It is with my focus of inclusive design and accessibility. And so, as I mentioned before, that in addition to graphic design, I also do photography. So, a lot of my photography is images of the urban landscape. A lot of my photographs are of a brick wall and cement grounds and so on. And so they have a very rich and textural aspect quality to them. So I've been trying to find ways this past couple years of trying to find ways to, to bring my graphic design, my inclusive design, based design, and my photography coming together. I want them to come together. And so I have the grant process of a grant that I received this past spring to make a photo book of my photography, but it's not just going to be any photo book. It's going to be designed so that person or people who are blind can also experience the photography. So the way that it's going to happen is that the photos are going to be printed in a method so that they're going to be tactile. And you can hover your hands and touch the surface of the photograph. And you can feel the different bumps and the different lines in the photograph. And in addition to that, one of my friends is writing poems for each of the photographs. And in the book, the poems are going to describe the theme, the ideas behind the photograph, the mode of the photographs. And so a person who is blind can use the Braille to read that, and then we get a good understanding of the photograph. And so in this process and the brainstorming of this project, we recognized the printer, my friend and myself realized that not all people who are blind can read Braille. So when we can have is going to have my friend to read out her poems that she will write. And we're going to record that. And we're going to save the recording on a phone drive. And we're going to make a pocket in the book so that someone can take the phone drive, put it into the computer, and they can hear the poems being read aloud to them as they go through the book, and when they feel the imagery with the hands.
That is a brilliant way to experience a book and to make it universally accessible.
Yeah. So, I'm obviously, because the book is going to be tactile, a person who is blind or has no vision can benefit from that the most. But persons that have sight can also experience the book to some way. They can, take the hand and they can feel the imagery with the hands. They can put their hands on Braille, feel what that feels like. It's really, in my mind, it's about using experience, trying to make the best experience possible for everybody, regardless of what ability they have. And oftentimes, when you think about accessibility, you think about web design, web accessibility. Hopefully, everyone knows now, web, the experience on the web is only a part of life. When you come into contact with physical things, people who are blind, people who have disability of any kind, they have to go out, they have to buy food, they have to buy, they have to spend their life outside of the web. And so I'm very interested in trying to make all forms of web design accessible.
Well, I'm hoping, or not hoping, I know you will definitely be a trailblazer in that area.
The one thing I can say is, regardless of it's me or anybody else, it needs to be done. We need to talk more about disability rights. We need to talk about more about accessibility, not just for people with disabilities, but for people with disabilities. I think that given that things are beginning to be more online, like classes, going to be on, and conferences are going to be on. So accessibility is going to be very, very important go forward. And this needs to be done.
Agreed. 100%. All right. Well, we're at the end of our interview. So thank you very much, John, for spending time with me today.
Thank you for having me.
This concludes Season 2, Episode 9 of Tell It to Neil. If any of the facts or information included in this episode are incorrect, please feel free to get in touch through our email, hello@tellittoneil.com. If you would like to get in touch with John, please contact him through email at jlonell@d.umn.edu.